Chapter 12. When they finally make it home, it is well past midnight. At least, thinks Draco as he pulls off his cloak, he and his team have managed to redirect all of the week's incoming shipments. Draco had contacted Wizards Insuring Your Insured Insurance to comp the cargo lost in the fire. The owners of said cargo were met with and mollified for the time being. Once that was done, Draco happily directed all of the portmaster's complaints and trepidations to Weasley. All in all, it's been a wonderfully productive day. Draco begins to climb the stairs to their bedrooms, then stops. Harry is still standing on the bottom step, worrying the too long hem of his jumper. "I think we need to talk," says Harry. Draco observes him for a moment, then gives him a gentle smile. "Darling," he says, coming back down the stairs to touch Harry's cheek. "We'll take our time. We'll get to know each other." "No," Harry replies, looks down. It's not that I don't want you." "I know," says Draco. "Everything's moving rather quickly. I'm in no rush." "I just think," Harry says, "I think you need to know what you're getting yourself into before we, Draco can't keep the fond smile off his face. He wonders if Harry knows that he's just as nervous, just as scared of Harry seeing his darker sides. His little bundles of shadow left over by the war. "If I can trust the great boy who lived to get to know me and not to run away screaming, I think you can trust me to do the same for you." "Draco," Harry tries again, but Draco shakes his head. "Tomorrow," he says, "it's past midnight. Let's sleep, and in the morning you will tell me everything. Yes?" Harry nods, goes on his toes to kiss Draco softly on the lips. Draco closes his eyes, the tenderness momentarily overwhelming. Draco walks Harry to his room and watches him slip inside. It's oddly comforting, knowing that they have all the time in the world to come together to... Draco tries to push away the words, "fall in love." They're so unlikely, so weighted, that he's afraid if he even thinks in their direction, this fragile thing between them will fall apart. Love has been such an impossibility, not only because of who he is, but also because of what he's seen. He knows well that for a connection to work, there needs to be at least some sort of understanding, some kind of acceptance of scars, inexplicable fears. He's lived through a nightmare, and though he's tried to make himself manageable, make himself bearable, he knows that the debris is still there, right at the surface. Asking someone to put up with that had always seemed cruel. But Harry has scars and traumas of his own, and if they're very, very impossibly lucky, perhaps this will mean that each can be careful enough with the other to let the both of them begin to heal. It's only when he's alone in his rooms that he realizes he's very much overwhelmed, and that even the joy of Harry's presence can't take away from the knot of tense worry in the pit of his stomach. His business is his life, and even though his brain understands that no one is maliciously targeting it, it still feels like he's found himself in a horribly precarious position. If he doesn't fix this, he'll start losing clients. If he fixes it in the wrong way, people will lose their jobs. Enjoyable as it is, imagining Weasley's reaction to every howler Draco has sent his way, it still isn't a solution to the problem. He briefly considers buying out the port in its entirety, but the length of the Aura's investigation won't change along with the ownership, so there's not really much point. Apart from annoying Weasley, his hands are completely tied until the investigation is concluded. What will become of him, he wonders, if Malfoy Enterprises falls apart? It had taken him years to build a reputation in the cargo industry that was good enough to ensure ongoing contracts. But starting over from scratch in a new field, it takes at least 3 years to get a business up and running when entering a new industry. And that's without the pervasive perception that he walks into meeting rooms dark mark first. For Draco, it's always been... He cuts off that line of thought. It's a waste. He is where he is, and all he can do is try to deal with it. Moreover, there's Harry now, and maybe that will be enough to make him want to come home early, to incentivize him to start living a real life. Draco gets into bed and smiles, just through the wall. There is a man, and that man... He falls asleep, smiling. There's a click, a shh. Draco sits bolt upright in the darkness, wand out, and pointed toward the door. But it's only Harry, he realizes, trying to blink away sleep. He's standing in the doorway wearing his boxers and one of Draco's t-shirts, eyeing the wand. Is it morning? Draco asks. Harry shakes his head, hesitates, then comes closer, crawling into the bed beside Draco. I didn't want to sleep alone, he whispers. Draco pulls Harry close, and within minutes, dozes back off to sleep. They wake to the ward's screeching of intrusion. Harry is on his feet, wand out, and blinking blindly at the doorway. It opens a moment later to reveal Ginny Weasley. Draco's mouth falls open. He looks into her furious eyes and tries to understand what she is doing here. Her brother must have told her that he'd seen the two of them together. And still, that was no reason to go breaking into the manor as though she had some right to... Draco's heart shoots to his throat. He starts to sweat. His mouth goes dry. It cannot be. It cannot. Draco realizes that he hadn't even considered the possibility that Potter could still be married, that the thing he was hiding from was his... Draco feels his stomach heave, his wife. The wards are still screeching, and Draco briefly considers letting them continue. He doesn't want to know. He doesn't want to hear. He doesn't even want to consider the possibility. But it's not a possibility, is it? It's a fact. If it were not... If Weasley and Harry were just friends, Ginny would have owled Harry. But she didn't. She showed up here. Draco waves his wand and the wards fall silent. For a moment, the room is quiet. Then Ginny begins to speak. So it's you, screwing my husband, she says, sneering. What, did you think you could fuck your way back to forgiveness? Through the bed of a married man? Draco doesn't respond. Instead, he's looking at Harry, who's standing there, still in Draco's t-shirt, wide-eyed and open-mouthed. Ginny, he tries. No, you. I fucking knew you were screwing someone. I knew it. Ever since that night a few months ago when we were staying at Ron's and you just up and left, you were gone for 3 days. At least I know where you were now. Fucking Death Eater scum. Is it a fetish, Harry? What is it? I'm too good? Too pure? But this... Too good! Harry finally finds his voice. Too good? I know what you did, Gin. I know what all of you... Stop! Says Draco, and Harry falls silent, turning to face him. Please have your... Marital, he chokes out the word, dispute elsewhere. This is my home, and neither of you are welcome here. Draco had been lied to, or not lied to. Harry had never explicitly lied, but he most certainly has been led on. And now he's... Draco has been working so hard to be good, to remain honorable, in the face of everything that happened since the end of the war, and here he is, a monster all over again because he... Draco closes his eyes. Tries to control his breathing. Draco? Malfoy, Draco snaps. What? Asks Harry. Please address me as Malfoy. Use of my given name is reserved only for people I am close to. Draco can feel his insides twisting. He should have known. Should have asked. Should have been able to predict this. He should have read the fucking Daily Prophet. Please leave my home at once. Draco, no, you don't understand. There is nothing to understand. I understand perfectly. You were having trouble in your marriage and needed a place to stay where Mrs. Potter would not think to look for you. Don't play the victim, Malfoy. I know you seduced him, manipulated him into your bed. Harry's too good to ever let something like you near him without some kind of... Ginny, shut up. Draco sighs, climbs out of his bed. Harry tries to get in his way, but Draco gently pushes him aside. I have business to attend to. Please leave. I don't ever want to see you again. And with that, Draco walks out of his bedroom. It's a wonder, he thinks, as he walks down the stairs, spelling his robes onto himself. In all of his years of loneliness, he's never felt quite as alone as he does now. For a moment he imagines going to Pansy, resting his forehead on her knees, letting her comfort him. But Pansy is dead because of Potter and his men. There's no one to go to, no one at all. And this feeling is the price, he realizes, the price of welcoming an enemy into his bed. Potter had participated in the murder of every Slytherin in his year, and Draco had just turned away from it, pretended that it wasn't there, because Potter had shown remorse. He'd let himself fall, head first, into the trap of the dark, twisted logic of, I've changed. Why shouldn't have he? The one good thing to come out of all of this, Draco realizes, as he rips Potter's heating charms out of the manor's walls, is that magic is no longer twisting his stomach. The thought of Potter is doing that well enough on its own.